ഹരേ കൃഷ്ണ, വെൽക്കം, സ്വാഗതം. My talk today is fear or faith. What motivates you? Fear or faith? What motivates you? What makes you tick? What controls your life? Fear or faith? It's a gulf of difference between the two, no? How many would prefer fear? Show of hands. None. How many would prefer faith? Well, that's pretty much unanimous. I guess we're done. Yes, of course. So, let's look at fear and faith from different points of view. And then we'll bring the Shastra in at some point, as we like to do here. Here in the material world, everything's very tenuous. Everything here, life here, hangs by a gossamer thread. And at any second, it could snap. And it's over. You know it. We all know it. We've seen it. Some of us have lived it. Yeah? So there's legitimate reasons for being fearful in this world. But do we want to walk around fearful? In fear? Is that the best for us to be? No, of course not. If we put all our faith in the material world and in matter, which is temporary and transitory, like this body, then we're going to be fearful. If we focus on the eternal, on the transcendental, on the soul, on spirit, on our true identity, and we instill our faith in that, by whatever measure you raise your faith, by that same measure you reduce your fear. That's how it works. So, what are we afraid of? I've got a list here. Are you afraid of isolation? Being alone? Many people are afraid of being alone. It's not always easy to be alone. People are afraid of being lonely. Loneliness. It's actually great joy in being alone. But you have to be on that side of it. Oh, I'm alone. I can do whatever I want to do. There's a freedom in that, my friends. Are we afraid of alienation? We'll be rejected. People won't like us. They won't like me because of my skin color, because of my accent, because I look different. Are we afraid of being abandoned by those we love? It's a big one, no? Abandonment. Are you afraid of what's going to happen to you? Well, that's a popular fear, that one. What's going to happen to me next? Right? Are you afraid of what won't happen for you? Well, what if this doesn't happen? Then where will I be? Yeah? That's a popular one, too. Are you afraid of rejection? Are you afraid of ostracism? Well, we covered that with isolation. Are you afraid of being found out? Your insufficiencies, your inadequacies. When will they see through me? How long can I keep up my mask before they discover who I really am? That I'm not that confident. Very common. You afraid of not being good enough? Are you afraid of pain? Pain and suffering? It's legitimate fear. Thieves and criminals? When I moved to Ireland, somebody said to me, an Irish person said, you know, this is a nation of thieves. Really? There's got to be a few that aren't thieves. There's a lot of thievery going on, especially in the countryside. Are you afraid of sickness and ill health? The more afraid you are, the more you're fearful, the more you contract, the greater chance you'll get sick. The greater chance you'll suffer from ill health. Because you're contracting. You're closing up the channel. Faith, on the other hand, opens the channel. We have contraction, expansion. What else is there? Look at your lungs. We want expansion. Far less chance of becoming ill when you're expanded and the energy is flowing. Far less chance. Don't meditate on sickness. How many here are hypochondriacs? Show of hands. Sort of one there. He's not completely there, but sometimes he is. He's an honest man. Are you afraid of guilt? Do you suffer from guilt? Do you suffer from guilt for neglecting others? Do you suffer from guilt for mistreating others? Do you suffer from guilt due to your own self-indulgence? Your own sense enjoyment? Oh, good. What was I thinking last night? Yeah. I've heard that in Ireland on a few occasions. Are you afraid of death? And if so, are you afraid of rebirth? People are afraid of death, but they don't hook it up with rebirth. Hey, and you can come back and do it all over again. What? I thought, yeah, well, if I only have one go, I'm going to do this. You see these people say all the time, well, you know, only got one shot. I'm going to do this. Yeah, if only that were true, my friend. But it isn't. You got as many shots until you hit the target. Jeez, I keep missing the target. Mm-hmm. You'll be back. Don't worry. I'll give you a new bow and a new arrow and a body. That's what they'll do. Are you afraid of damnation? Going to hell. Suffering eternally. If you're a Christian, you know you're going to be suffering eternally. Forever. If you go to hell, don't worry, you won't. It doesn't work like that. Just to, you know, a little payback and then you'll be fine. It doesn't go forever. Are you afraid of punishment or retribution for those things you did, even the things that you know no one else knows about? They keep track, you know. They do. Are you afraid of God? Are you afraid of God? Are you neutral about God? Or are you loving toward God? What kind of feeling do you get when you think about God? The Old Testament of the Bible will just absolutely fill you full of fear. Because that is the God of vengeance and retribution and hellfire and brimstone. A lot of people buy into that. You afraid of the devil? The devil comes in many forms, my friends, and a lot of them are walking down the street. So keep your eyes open. Don't engage with the devil. You don't need to be afraid. Are you afraid of failure? How many here are afraid of failure at whatever it is you might do? what is that, about less than half, just about half, and as plus the ones that won't put their hands up. So I'd say solid half, maybe three quarters. People are afraid of failure, but you know what holds people back more, especially how shall I say this nicely? Capable people, intelligent people, I can add educated people, they don't really, I mean, it's not that they won't have failures, but failure is not really what they're about. I ask them to look back in your life and give me your list of failures. What'd you fail at? I had this job once and I failed at that. Oh yeah. Did you like the job? No, I hated it. Oh. So did you fail? I mean, really? The greater fear is success, not failure. People think it's failure. It isn't. It's success. Be careful what you wish for, because you just might get it. And then what? Right? So, success is more daunting because then you have to step up. If you become successful, you have to take responsibility for that success. You have to maintain it. You have to feed it. You have to carry the weight of it upon your shoulders. You have to respond to people. Because the more success you have, the more people will come around you that want a piece of that. Could you do this for me? Could you help me out here? Would you look at this for me? You wanted it, and now you got it. It's more responsibility. So I'm saying you should reject success? No. Not saying that. Just know what it is you want and what it's going to require. What it will cost, yeah? When you achieve it. Here's a personal one. Is your fear caused by people who do not believe in you? Do you spend time with people who don't believe in you? If so, why? I know what you're going to tell me. Well, it's my mother. I mean, what can I do? It's my father. It's my husband. It's my wife. Yeah. Never tell your secrets to people who don't believe in you. Never tell your plans to people who you know don't believe in you. You know why? Because your plan is like a balloon. Just a balloon. Inflated. And you tell your plans to somebody who doesn't believe in you, they go, oh, come on. That's never going to work. Or they'll say, well, yeah, that sounds like a good idea, but you'll never do that. Huh? Every time you hear that, it's like a pin hole in your balloon. And the more of those pinholes you get, guess what? You're defeated before you begin. Huh? Don't tell your plans to people who don't believe in you. Here's a quote from the Mahabharata. That high soul who fears no creature and whom no creature fears will have no fear from any direction. Beautiful, huh? Isn't that a beautiful quote? If you fear no creature, that includes the animals, well, you know, you could come face to face with a tiger, but I don't encourage it. And No creature has any fear of you. No creature needs to fear you. Because you don't kill them. You don't eat them. You don't cause them distress. We say, live and let live, don't we? We've talked about this many times here. If the world would follow a simple vegetarian diet, we would have... They're always saying, how are we going to solve the problem of hunger in the world? Well, first of all, you got to stop killing animals. That's number one. And unless and until you do that, you're never going to solve the hunger. Because there's plenty of resources and there's plenty of food to go around. All these people that are starving, there's no need for it. It's mismanagement of resources. Due to what? Greed and need for power. That's what it is. Here's another quote. Every day, 1,000 occasions for sorrow and 100 occasions for fear afflict unenlightened or disillusioned persons. A wise person is never bothered by such things. What does that say? Don't put your energy into negative circumstances. Do not give negative circumstances energy. Don't feed them. Anything that lives, including an idea or an emotion, my friends, needs to be fed. Everything needs to feed. Everything. That's how it keeps going. It sustains. It feeds, just like we do. You stop feeding it by giving it energy when it comes to an idea or an emotion. What happens to it? You stop thinking about it. What happens to it? Think about something when you were a kid that you were afraid of, that you don't even think about it anymore. It's no longer a fear, is it? That's the example. We must learn to control the mind. Okay? How we'll do that, we'll get to it. Fear, faith. We talked about fear enough. Let's talk about faith now. Let's get a little more upbeat here. Who or what do you place your faith in? We all have faith. Some kind of faith, some degree of faith. Different degrees of faith in different things. But we all have some faith. Otherwise, we'd be nihilists and believe in nothing. And there are people like that, I suppose. But I don't think it's most of you, frankly. So, who or what do you place your faith in? You place your faith in your father, your mother, your spouse. When worse comes to worse, will they be there for you? Some of them will be, I'm sure. Do you place your faith in scientists? Because science in the modern day keeps telling us they know better than everybody. And if they don't have all the answers today, and look at how they wow us with technology, if they don't have all the answers today, they will soon have all the answers. If we clone the sheep, we can clone you, my friend. Well, thanks very much. I don't want any cloning, thank you. Do you place your faith in politicians? In governments? If you're like the American government, then you'd place your faith in the military. That seems to be what they're all about these days. Number one, weapons producer and exporter in the world. Good old US of A. And what do you find that happens there? Do they get invaded? No, they haven't been invaded since who knows when. Pearl Harbor. That was Hawaii. They don't get invaded. Their children kill each other in the schools. That's how the karma comes round, with all these super duper weapons that are available. Well, you think you're going to produce weapons and export them, and you think that karma is not going to come back? You don't need an invader. Your children will take care of it for you. Yeah, sobering, isn't it? You place your faith in democracy? In communism? In socialism? In some form of government? You place your faith in money? If I only had... I have a client. He's worth upwards of $50 million. And recently, well, not that recently, here in Europe, they had, I think it was the Euro Millions lottery. And there was actually $100 million that you could win. It was $100 million, it was not so long ago. And this same gentleman, he turns to his wife, he says, you know, I'm going to buy a ticket on that lottery. If only I could win that $100 million, I could retire. That's what this multi-millionaire said. If only I could win that $100 million, I'd be free to retire. He couldn't retire, even if he had the $100 million, because he's too afraid to retire. He's got to keep working. God bless him. Here's a quote from the Srimad Bhagavatam. For one who has unflinching faith in God, all the good qualities of God and the demigods are consistently manifest in his person. So where should our faith be placed? It should be placed in God. Here, we practice bhakti yoga. This is Krishna consciousness, and we learn by studying Bhagavad Gita. We learn, of course, that there are many forms of God, but we lean toward Krishna, who spoke Bhagavad Gita some 5,000 years ago. Why? Because Krishna is the all-attractive supreme personality of Godhead. He's the most beautiful and loving manifestation of the Godhead. And there he is. With Radha, his eternal consort. We never get God without the goddess, my friends. You got God, you got a goddess. Okay, always we need the balance, always. So we learn to place our faith in God. Why should we place our faith in God? You may argue, well, I can't see him. He didn't show himself to me. Never shook my hand. Never spoke to me. We know that there's something way beyond this material world. Those of us who are aware know instinctively, way deep down, that there is spirit, there is something that animates everything in the world, the animator that gives everything life. That's God, or the energy of God. So the more we become conscious or aware of our true identity, which is that of spirit souls. And it's the soul, of course, we know that leaves the body at the end of life. Because when you die, if they open you up, all the organs are there. Everything's there. So why doesn't it function? Because the soul has left. So we know that instinctively, that we are spiritual in nature. So where did we come from? Just a womb? Well, we did come out of a womb, but there is a creator. There is a source, and that's Krishna. So when we practice yoga, which is connecting ourselves with God, all systems of yoga are meant to connect you with God. This system of yoga, bhakti is meant to connect you with God through love and devotion. Because what do we want more than anything? Love. We want love, we want to be loved. Here's another quote. With faith, in other words, we need to develop this faith, our faith in the eternal, our faith in the transcendental, our faith in God. With faith, one can see the invisible, believe the unbelievable, and receive the impossible. Isn't that a great quote? Do you think that's true? Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. If you really want to have an exciting life, or a magical life, or a serendipitous life, get close to God and watch it all unfold. Develop your faith. Develop your faith in that which is eternal and which lasts. And not that you can't have faith in certain things while we're here, people and things. That's fine too, but understand where they fit in the scheme of things. Ultimately, we need to go toward the eternal. Faith is not simply believing that Krishna can help you, that God can help you. It's knowing that He will. It's knowing that He will. Let's look at Bhagavad Gita. There are three kinds of faith. This is Bhagavad Gita, chapter 17. Persons in the mode of goodness place their faith in the demigods. The demigods, the angels, if you like, the archangels, those who run the universe, those who make everything work, even though you don't see them. You haven't met the CEO of Coca-Cola either, have you? Yet you can see Coca-Cola's in every drink machine, even though you don't know the CEO. Somebody's making something work. Same thing's true on the universal level. Those in the mode of passion place their faith in materialistic men and demons. Well, you place your faith in materialistic people because you want to achieve things materially. Maybe you have a need for that to some extent because we're in material bodies. We're living in this world. But ultimately, no. Materialistic people and demons. What are demons? Demons are people that want to manipulate others, feed off of others, take advantage of others, intimidate others, cheat people. Those are demons. Demons are very widely worshipped. There are many demons that are widely worshipped. They don't know they're demons, necessarily. They think they're their savior, for example. How do you know if somebody's a demon? I know it's a strong word, very simple. Figure out their intention. Figure out anybody you want to deal with. It is important to understand their intention. Why do they do what they do? What is it they want? What are they up to? They say, oh, I can do this for you, I can do that for you, I can do that for you. Okay. Maybe it's just getting your car fixed. I don't know. What is the person's intention? What's behind it? What do they want? Because many people tell you all they want is this, but they don't want this, they want that. But they don't tell you about that, correct? And those in the mode of ignorance place their faith in ghosts and spirits. Do people worship ghosts and spirits? Oh, yes, my friends. In our modern world? Oh, yes, they do. Yes, they do. We could even say ancestors to some extent. There are certain cultures where ancestor worship is very important. Voodoo, Santeria. These are magical practices, black magic. And they evoke ghosts and spirits to do their bidding, to do their work, which is usually to either hurt somebody or to manipulate somebody or make this woman fall in love with me. Yeah, they do it. It's true. I would suggest, why don't you make the woman fall in love with you yourself? Never mind ghosts and spirits. Bhagavad Gita, chapter 6. Yoginam api sarvesham madgatenam taratmana shraddhavan bhajate yomam same yuktattamamata. This is Krishna speaking. And of all yogis, he said, this yogi does this, this practice of yoga gives this, this practice of yoga gives that, this practice of yoga gives that. The Bhagavad Gita explains every form of yoga there is and its result. So he says, of all yogis or practitioners of yoga, the one with great faith who always abides in me thinks of me within himself and renders transcendental loving service to me. He is the most intimately united with me in yoga and is the highest of all. That is my opinion. It's really, it makes me smile when Krishna speaks like that. At the end he says, mataha. That's what I think. That's my opinion. That's what it means in Sanskrit. It's a very humble statement. He puts this humble statement at the end. Well, you know, that's what I think. Well, yeah, okay, well, you're God, so okay. But, you know, he doesn't do anything with ego or with a sense of superiority. He just makes these statements to tell you who he is and what he encompasses, which are mind-blowing statements. But he does it in a matter-of-fact manner. He doesn't huff and puff about it. He says, well, you know, this is what I think. My opinion. What do they say? Faith moves mountains. Do you think it does? Yeah. Well, it depends what kind of mountain you're trying to move. I don't know if you're going to move Everest with it, but it means it creates big shifts and change. Tremendous things can happen. Or it means the impossible becomes possible, right? That's what it means. Chapter 9, Bhagavad Gita. Ashradhana Purusha Dharmasyasya Parantapa Aprapyamam Nivartante Mrityu Sansara Vartmani. Those who are faithful in devotional service. What is devotional service? This is bhakti yoga. This is the yoga of love and devotion. How do you love God? Well, you have to develop a relationship. How do you love anybody unless you have a relationship with them? And a relationship isn't something that you just click and we're okay, we're connected. Hi. No, there's a little more to it than that. We need to see each other. We need to interact. We need to be in different circumstances together. Not always favorable. Sometimes difficult. Sometimes this person's suffering. Then what? Oh, well, I don't have time for that. I'm just a fair weather friend. So relationships have ups and downs, and sometimes we need to be there. if you're developing a relationship. So same thing is true with God. You need to develop your relationship. And we need to develop our faith. I'm going to read a purport here in a minute where Prabhupada explains that very nicely. Sometimes people come to bhakti yoga, Krishna consciousness, because they're curious. Well, what's this about? That's fine. That's good. Some people have faith. They just have it. Some, they don't have it initially. It takes time to develop it. That's fine. That's all right. But you need to put in the time and the effort and the energy to develop your faith. So he says, those who are not faithful in devotional service cannot attain me. So he's saying, what we do in Krishna consciousness is we try to learn how to serve God. Because mostly what people do is they use God as the order supplier. Dear Lord, how's it going? Okay, well, I need this, I need that, I need this, I need that. Could you do this? Could you do that? And, oh, I almost forgot. And this is really important. Right? That's what we do. Is it okay to do that? Yeah. But what do you do in exchange? This is a one-way street. Good for me. He's not that important. And then your answer is, oh, he doesn't need anything. I don't have anything he needs. He's got everything. He doesn't have your attention. Does he have your love? Does he have your faith? Do you want to be with him? People want to be with people who want to be with them, don't they? You want to hang out with somebody who'd rather not hang out with you? We've tried that on occasion in our lives. Oh, wait. Can we just get together? Yeah, okay. What time? Yeah, how's that work? So that's like you saying, yeah, well, I'm busy right now, but that's my list, okay? See ya. Right? No, that's not right. So what do? We learn how to serve God. How to develop the relationship. You can do many things. You can offer a leaf, a flower, a fruit, or water on your little altar at home. Whatever little shrine you have, where you go to do your meditation and your spiritual practice and chant your japa. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama. You got a place like that in your home, right? And if you don't, why don't you? You need one. Even if it's a picture on the shelf, you need it. And you cook your nice food. You offer that to God first. Then you have it. There's a great story. Let me tell you the story. There was a disciple. This is India. A disciple guru. The guru says, when you cook your food, you place it in front of the deity, a picture of the deity, of God, whatever picture you like. You know, like this. And you offer it to him. Here, I've made this for you. Please accept my offering. And he's going to eat it. That's what the guru said. And the disciple said, well, Swamiji, I have made my food. I offered it to him. And all the food was still there. He didn't eat any of it. Still there. God eats with all of his senses, not just his tongue. What he accepts is your offering. He accepts the love that you have done this small thing for him. I've made this food, but first, please, sit down, take. If somebody comes to your house, What do? Please sit down and eat. If you're going to have dinner, sit down and eat. What would you like? Isn't that it? Don't you serve them first and say, oh, and I made this because I know you really like it. Huh? I know this is your favorite. Oh, I love that. I made it for you. Oh, great. Please. Right? That's what we do. Anyway, the food wasn't eaten as far as this disciple was concerned. Cruz just nodded. He says, okay, now, here's the Ishopanishad. This is one of the Upanishads. I want you to learn the first verse. What's the first verse of the Ishopanishad? Om Purnam Adaha Purnamidam Purnat Purnam Udachite Purnasya Purnam Adaya Purnam Eva Vashishite. The Lord is divine, perfect, and complete, and all the emanations that come from God are complete, and God is never diminished, having made all these emanations into the world, the whole creation, etc. God is still whole and perfect, essentially, what it says, right? He says, okay, now I want you to learn that verse. So he went away, came back next day. The guru says, so? Did you learn the verse? Yes, Guruji, I have learned it. Please, let me hear you. Om Purnam Adaha Purnamidam. And he said the whole verse perfectly. He said, very good. He says, so now the verse is in your mind. You have accepted it. You have assimilated it into your body. Now let me look in the book that I gave you. Where you read the verse. Yes, here is the book. And here is the verse still on the page. Just like the food, still on the altar. Here's the verse, still on the page. How come it didn't disappear when you learned it? That's what he said. So that was his proof. Here, I'm going to read this little purport from Prabhupada. The faithless cannot accomplish this process of devotional service, bhakti yoga. That is the purport of this verse. Faith is created by association with devotees. If you want to develop your faith, you need to associate with people who possess the faith. Unfortunate people, even after hearing all the evidence of Vedic literature from great personalities, still have no faith in God. They are hesitant and cannot stay fixed in the devotional service of the Lord. Thus, faith is a most important factor for progress in Krishna consciousness. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is said that faith is the complete conviction that simply by serving the Lord, Sri Krishna, one can achieve all perfection. That is called real faith. So we have to develop that faith. Then he quotes the Bhagavatam, by giving water to the root of the tree, one satisfies its branches, twigs, and leaves. And by supplying food to the stomach, one satisfies all the senses of the body. Similarly, by engaging in the transcendental service of the Supreme Lord, one automatically satisfies all the demigods, all living entities, and all obligations are satisfied. Then he talks about three divisions of faith. First class, second class, third class. So here, this is Prabhupada. In the third class are those who have no faith. Even if they are officially engaged in devotional service, they cannot achieve the highest perfectional stage. Most probably they will slip after some time. They may become engaged, but because they don't have complete conviction and faith, it is very difficult for them to continue. So when you're trying to do something, to practice yoga, like we do here, and establish your faith, it takes time to do that. and it takes practice. And the more practice, as we say, practice makes perfect. So a third class devotee is somebody who is interested, who is drawn to Krishna consciousness or yoga, but their faith has not crystallized yet. And then he says, as far as the development of faith is concerned, one who is well versed in the literatures of devotional service and has attained the stage of firm faith is called a first class person in Krishna consciousness. So here he's encouraging us to study. In Krishna consciousness, it's not just when we talk about love and devotion to God, which is largely, it's an emotional exchange. Do you have to be a scholar to learn to love God? No, not at all. You don't have to be. But you need to have some philosophical grasp of what you're doing. If you don't have a philosophical grasp, at least to some extent, then you won't understand the reasons why you're doing what you're doing. And some people, like jnanis, who are more concerned with philosophy, primarily, in their practice of yoga, they're more in their head. And yet, they have a strong philosophical grasp of things, but where's the heart? Head, heart. They have to be connected. Many, many years ago, the first time I went to India, I went to, in Vrindavan, we went to Bunki Bihari Temple at 5 o'clock in the evening. I remember it as if it was yesterday. This is like, 40 years ago. And the deity opened, and it was dark out. There was lights on in the temple, and the curtains opened. And these little old ladies were there in the front. You know how they go. They're right up in the front, and they are as poor can be. Some of them are barely wearing, they're wearing saris, but you know, you could read a book through the threads kind of thing. But I was watching them, you know. I was fairly new in Krishna consciousness, a couple of years, you know. But I just could see their faces when they saw the deity and how deep the faith and the love was pouring from their eyes. I could see it. I could feel it. It was almost palpable. Now, these are not scholarly people. So really, it's about the heart more than anything, especially if we're practicing bhakti. Second class devotees are those who are not very advanced in understanding the devotional scriptures, but who automatically have firm faith that Krishna bhakti, or service to Krishna, is the best course. And so, in good faith, they've taken it up. Thus, they are superior to the third class, who have neither perfect knowledge nor good faith, but by association and simplicity are trying to follow. So, pray, chant, offer your food, spend time with devotees, spend time with people who have faith. And this is how you'll develop your faith over time. In the 12th chapter, Krishna says, those who follow this imperishable path of devotional service or bhakti yoga, and who completely engage themselves with faith, making me the supreme goal, that's Krishna, are very, very dear to me. Only by practicing unalloyed devotional service with full faith in me can one obtain me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I am naturally dear to my devotees who take me as the only goal of their loving service. God is detached. By definition, God is equal to all. He's not prejudiced, and he's not biased. He's detached. But when you enter into a loving relationship with him, that's when it changes. What will you do? What won't you do for those you love? What? You've done things for people you love that you never thought you would ever do. Why did you do it? And sometimes you even went against your own principles to do it. Why would you do that? Because you wanted to break your principles? No. Because you did it out of love. So God, I'm not saying he's breaking his principles. I'm just saying he will do all kinds of things for you once that loving bond is established. So what motivates you? Fear or faith? Place your faith in that which is going to be there even at the point of death. Whatever spiritual gain or spiritual advancement or spiritual evolution and realization that you gain through your lifetime, it will travel with you after death. Whatever you own materially, whatever you have amassed and accumulated materially, whoever your loved ones are, they're gone. Everything is gone at death. So your faith is the boat that will carry you across the ocean of birth and death. Thank you very much for your kind attention. Hare Krishna. Questions?
Is faith something that's intangible then? Is it something that is an eternal faith? God is putting something eternal. That's the knowledge you mean.
Some people have faith. And for them, if you're born with faith in God, how many here have always had faith in God since they were children? That's a lot. That's a lot of people. And how many did not have faith in God when they were children for whatever reason? Some people are raised atheists, as I well know. But over time, your faith has developed. Okay? So, that's it. It can be developed. It is an intangible thing. But when I can only speak for myself from this point of view, the closer I am to God, the happier I am, and the more grounded I am. I just absolutely know, not just because I say I know, not like that. I know because I've had so many examples of a reciprocal experience. By dedicating myself to God and his service to Krishna, and seeing the results of that, he's taken me on the ride of a life. I've led a charmed life because I was willing to make huge sacrifices. I mean big sacrifices in my youth. To place my faith, to take that chance and go with him and see what happens and leave everything else behind. Very, very scary. When I made that decision to travel 2,000 miles from my home and move into the ashram and practice yoga, I was sitting on the floor and I was convulsing with tears. My body was aching. And I was convulsing because it was so difficult a decision to make. And what if I'm wrong? What if I'm wrong? You're leaving everything behind that you worked for these past 22 years, and you're going to live with a bunch of strangers in an ashram and learn to love Krishna. Yeah, that's what I'm going to do. It was very difficult. And but as I learned to love Krishna, as I developed in my service, he just blew my mind left, right, center, and so many different things that were introduced into my life because I actually surrendered myself to him. I gave myself to him. I'm not saying you should give your entire life to him because that might be too scary. It's scary. But give a little. Give something. You certainly can give something. The more you can give, the more you will see how he reciprocates. Believe me. And your life can become a charmed life. You know, here, no matter what we were capable of, I know many of you are extremely talented and able and capable, and some of you are very, very well educated. I know that. But whatever you can do as an individual in this world, it may be amazing, but is nothing compared to when you connect yourself to the divine energy, to spiritual energy. Because whatever you can do, it is still limited, because you're limited in your capacity. There's nothing limited about being close to God. It's completely unlimited. Now the whole sky has blown open and all the possibilities, both materially and spiritually, have now become available to you. What happened to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita? Krishna says, well, I think I'll show you who I really am. And then came the Vishwarup, universal form. He manifested the universal form. You know what happened when he manifested the universal form? The entire scene, they were on the battlefield before the battle. There were millions of warriors and animals, elephants and horses and everything was arrayed, waiting for this battle. It all disappeared. That whole scene disappeared. And all he saw all around him was the universal form of God, the gods, and all of these things. There was no sky, there was no earth, there was no dimension. The directions, they were gone. It was 360 degrees of this amazing form of all the manifestations and the gods, the goddesses of God. And also what was going to happen in the battle was also shown to him in the same vision. If he can do that, what could he do for you? I'm sure you don't need all that. I'm sure whatever it is you need is on a smaller scale. Now, I don't want to cramp your style here, if those of you are very ambitious. Yes?
I've had a very interesting life.
Mm-hmm.
And
I can see it in your eyes.
And when I was young, I watched my mother, who believed in God, do severely horrific things. So I found it, I associated people who believed in God with crazy people who were mental, who were mentally ill. I was like, only mentally ill people are believe in God.
But since you're a child, then if she's your role model, then yeah. So that makes sense. So your conclusion became, well, this means it's connected to that which is unstable,
yeah,
or irrational.
Irrational.
Yeah, but she's only one example.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, that might be your saving grace that she does believe in God. She was working through her stuff.
Yeah, that's true.
Your mother has a huge shadow, my dear, a huge shadow. And the shadow got way bigger than the reality. That's what happened.
Yeah.
So I hope she's come along.
She's much better than she was.
Ah. Does she still believe in God?
Yes.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Anybody can be redeemed, my friends. Anybody can be redeemed. God, Krishna wants you all to come home. This is not home. When will you go home? He's waiting, you know. I'm waiting. When will you come? Oh, no, I'm busy here. I'm busy here, Krishna. I'm doing this and this. How's that working out for you? Yeah. 60-40. Okay, well, I'll just wait then. Wait for you to come. You have to develop your faith. That's what I've been saying. You have to get closer to God. So you feel it. You actually can feel it in your heart. I'm not making it up. To me, it's as tangible as the spiritual realm is as tangible as this realm in my experience. Some people actually talk to God. I know people who God talks to them all day long. So, you know, over time, little by little, step by step. The more you develop your faith, as I said earlier, the more you will reduce your fear. The more your fear will go away. The closer you get to God, the further you get from darkness. The Prabhupada gives this wonderful example. I've mentioned it to you before. I'm just trying to remember how they asked him the question. They said, yeah, but why is all these terrible things going on in this world? You know, pain and suffering and cruelty and so many things are going on in this world. And Prabhupada says, that's because they have turned away from God. And then he gives this example. He said, when you stand and you look up at the sun and you look in front of you, there is no shadow. As long as you look at the sun being God, you'll see no shadow. Now turn around and turn your back to the sun, and you will see all the shadows and your own shadow. Those who turn their back to God, to the sun, will live in shadow. That's where the shadow comes from. You say, well, God is making it. God's not doing it. They're doing it themselves by turning away from the light. That's how it works. Fear is shadow. Faith is light. So what do we want to develop? We want to develop our faith and stay in the light. Okay, are we good?
Hare Krishna.